Thanks for joining us here on Services School Stories. Your hosts for this season are Alec Emmert, Services School CEO and Navy veteran.
And Sydney Mathis, Chief Program Officer and former College Admissions Officer. This season, we'll cover topics as it relates to higher education, military service transition, and career opportunities and outcomes for veterans. Join us as we share student stories, inside tips from the admissions office, and conversations with employers actively hiring student veterans. Here we go.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Service to School Stories podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Kyle Downey. Kyle's the Senior Associate Director for Undergraduate Admissions and is our go-to person for all things veterans admission at Cornell. We've gained so much from our partnership with Cornell here at Service to School, but today I'm really excited to talk about the support and experience and the history of student veterans who enroll at Cornell. So Kyle, thank you so much for being here with us today. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and who you are in this higher education space supporting student veterans?
Thanks, Sydney. I'm happy to be here. And just a little bit about me. I did serve in the Army Reserves for 8 years while I was an undergraduate student and a graduate student. And then I broke into higher education shortly after finishing graduate school. And it's been a great opportunity for me to begin working with student veterans about 7 years ago while I was at Cornell. And it's been, frankly, the most rewarding part of my portfolio. I do work very, very closely with student veterans. And in my 20 plus years of higher ed experience, my background in advising and admissions seems to really come in handy. And I use all those skills right now to help find a pathway for student veterans to attend Cornell.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned about 7 years ago is when you started working with military students in the admissions part of the process, correct?
Right.
Can you share with our listeners a little bit about the history of Cornell and its affiliation with the military community?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really pleased to be able to be recognized, for example, as a Purple Heart University. That's a recent recognition that we received. And that to receive that designation, it means that we as a university have really a purposeful approach to supporting the entire military-affiliated population. And that certainly includes those who were wounded in defense of our country as well. And this came together when it did because of our tremendous flexibility and the financial support that Cornell has provided over the past few years for students and staff and faculty who have been activated from their Guard and Reserve units. And so while that's a recent recognition, recent events really triggered that recognition, Cornell has been dedicated to training military leaders from day one. When we opened our doors in 1868, we were practically a military academy. All of our students, male and female, were training in military leadership and had some military connected training because that was 1868 and we were founded in 1865. So critical time in our nation's history. And we're really proud of that. And since then, Cornellians have been involved in every major military conflict that the U.S. has participated in. And we continue to host all four ROTC branches on campus. And actually, we're the only one out of our Ivy League peers who hosts all the branches. And we are the hub for this region. Other universities come here for their military training in ROTC. And even not including ROTC, we're currently home to about 400 veterans, faculty, and staff who are here on the Ithaca campus. So it's a pretty robust community as well.
Yeah.
And that's an active group of students, an active group of faculty, and a lot of collaboration across those units, which I could go on for days about, but we'll start with that.
Yeah, for sure. That I think that back context is really important for a number of reasons. We have approximately 65 current Service to School matriculants on our system. So one of the larger student populations and one of the institutions we send the highest number of veterans to, which I think is really important when you're talking about this community, right? 400 military connected individuals on your community that students are coming to Cornell and they have that sense of belonging within those peers. So can you talk to us a little bit about why do you think Cornell has been so successful in establishing that community?
Absolutely. So we were among the leaders to really go out and partner with Service to School to begin to go out and visit military bases, to try to put higher education or highly selective universities in particular in the conversation as current members of the military or veterans were looking for a place to go and study. We really wanted to lead the effort to break down the myths that they either couldn't be admitted to a highly selective university, or if they did earn admission, that they wouldn't be able to afford to enroll. Mm-hmm. And so we were out and about from 7 years ago or more. And we also really set up a number of different structures to work with students from the admissions process right through graduation and beyond that existed to some level, but really needed improvement. We had only about 12 military veterans at the undergraduate level on our campus when I started working with this program. And we've been coming up on 100, which is our initial goal. And so tremendous growth of not just the student body, but also of all the resources that we've put in place. And we've been able to have a really high level of individual contact and a personal touch to our engagement with prospective students. I think that's really helped.
Absolutely.
We work very, very closely. I have a background in academic advising. And so, for example, I'm able to review transcripts and provide guidance to anyone who's thinking about applying to Cornell. And, you know, in case they need something between now and the time they file the application, or they just want general advice, I can offer individualized sessions for them to help construct that. And I really enjoy it, quite frankly.
For sure. And I think that's one of the best practices I would love to see admissions and higher education implement as a whole. There was a LinkedIn conversation I was in the other day about how students are reaching out to the student veterans office for admissions questions to talk about transfer credits and should they be going to admissions or how should these offices work together. And I think your background of having academic advising experience, just like you said, provides that personal touch. So then when students connect with you at Cornell, you know, they truly feel like they have all of their questions answered, you know, in kind of like a one-stop shop, which I think helps them better understand what that experience could look like at Cornell. When you are out trying to recruit student veterans or building that community, what do you think it is about the student veterans that are applying to Cornell that stands out to you the most in their applications or, you know, in those conversations that you're having with them?
Absolutely. Number one, I would say it's their drive. You know, I've worked in admissions for a long, long time, and many students are curious about what's offered at institutions like Cornell. But when I talk to our vets, they may not necessarily, you know, they didn't grow up thinking about going to a place like Cornell. They now have decided that they want to pursue a world-class degree at Cornell or one of our peers who are VetLink partners, for example. And they have that grit factor. They have the curiosity. They have the work ethic to really dive in. And they want it for their own reasons and for their children and their family. You know, and I think that's a big difference. It's they have the skills, they have overcome adversity, they have all those things that we know your experience in the military can provide, and the maturity, and they're phenomenal to work with, and the appreciation, you know, that I hear from students when they arrive. I mean, we had a welcome reception for both our returning military connected students and also our new ones that happened a couple weeks ago, just before classes began, and our president spoke and our provost spoke, and we had 100 and some different students there. And so many students that I'd never met in person before came up to me and said, thank you. You and the students who work with you, you know, really made this feel like a journey that I was assisted with all the way through, answered questions for me, and really made me feel at home before I even arrived on campus. And I really can't take all the credit for that. I do have anywhere from 5 to 7 different student veteran outreach peer counselors who work with me during the admissions process. And that really enhances the personal touch. So they have myself, they have our student veterans advisor, Mary, and they also have their assigned peer outreach counselor who is connecting with them from that first day that they apply. And typically they're from the same undergraduate college, sometimes even the same major. And so they have that really the fellow veteran, student veteran perspective. So it's not just me as a staff member of Cornell giving them information. It's that peer relationship that I think has been a critical part of our recent success.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned Mary as their advisor, and then they have the peer advisor. Is similar support in place to help, you know, the students once they're admitted on campus? Like, do those kind of same relationships follow them through to graduation?
Exactly. So technically, I'm the person who's in charge of the recruitment and admissions end of things. But Mary and I team up on that effort. She's a fantastic resource. And then we have our team of students who work on the admissions end. And then as students are matriculating into Cornell, many of them will participate in our Veteran Summer Bridge program. That's a program where they will come to campus and they'll take a couple summer classes and live on campus and get to know each other and really work on making a smooth transition to Cornell. And Mary leads that program and teaches our veteran seminar, for example. And then Mary has a team of sponsors who take over as students are about to enter the university and right on through their time here. It's almost like having a battle buddy when you arrive, you know, at a new base or someone to escort you through that process and give you the tips and the guidance. So really, I kind of think of it as an umbrella of support, you know, where we sort of pass the baton and connect the students seamlessly, hopefully, from myself and the students who work with me to Mary and her team, and then on into the student's undergraduate college or school, where we have veterans resource team members, often advisors in their home college, and of course our folks in financial aid and our certifying officials, and you know, you name it, I could go on from there. I mean, there's even a veterans colleague networking group that is all of us, faculty, staff, and students, with events that are organized. So those are some of the people who work throughout this process to keep our students supported, make sure they don't slip through the cracks. They're going to have questions. Right. There are going to be challenges. Cornell's a really difficult place. It's tough. You know, the academics are really challenging. You know, one of my Marines was chatting with me at the Student Veterans of America conference, NatCon, a couple of years ago, and he had just finished his first semester. And he said, this, you know, Cornell is the hardest thing I've ever done. He's like, and I was in the Marines and I served in combat. Like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. But the good thing was that, you know, we said, all right, you know, what do you need? And we were able to sort of activate all the resources to make sure that he, you know, even though first semester was a little bit of a struggle, that he had the tutors he needed, that he, you know, had all the support he needed to get back on. And he just graduated and went on to really get his dream job and his dream location. And it's just, I almost teared up when he spoke during our recognition ceremony for our spring graduates.
Yeah. And speaking to that kind of pre-preparation, applicants come to us all the time and, you know, they have dreams of going to schools like Cornell, but they're like, you know, Sydney, I didn't do great in high school. What are some things I can do to, you know, convince an admissions committee or to, you know, kind of fight my case that I can do, you know, that kind of high level academic work? What would your advice be to applicants there?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very common situation. Frankly, if I look at 100 student veterans who show me their high school transcript, 90 of those high school transcripts are going to be nothing like what a typical first year admit would look like at Cornell. And that's fine because we do enroll over 600 transfer students every year. And most of our student veterans come in as transfers and they can rebuild their academic record at a two-year college, at a four-year college, in person, sometimes even online if they choose their courses carefully, and put together, you know, let's say a year of really solid 3-5 or so coursework and really make that high school transcript a thing of the past. They are no longer the same person, and we know that. The goal is just to partner with them to make sure the admissions committee and the faculty and their department they want to go into know that as well. So it's just building up that academic evidence of what we know is that they can succeed, just developing a plan to help them be successful. I don't want to see anyone apply to Cornell who is not going to be successful the first time. And so I don't mind telling a student, you should not apply right now, but I will work with you to develop a plan, whether that takes a year or 2 years, to make sure that you are successful or you have the best chance of success possible in that process. And again, it's not just me. I'll tap into my colleagues from across campus for their expertise, link them up if they have really advanced questions. But that's a critical piece is, no, maybe at that moment they're not ready, but they can be. And sometimes they're totally ready, in which case I'm like, okay, let me just fine tune this and let make sure you know deadlines and what you're going to need. And we can really tailor that discussion to wherever they stand. But that's usually where I start, is trying to ask them a bit about their background, take a look at it and figure out where we should go based on their circumstances.
Yeah. And I love when the advice that we're giving applicants is echoed from you all in the admissions office, right? We try our best to tell applicants, you know, like, here's what they typically, you know, like to see in terms of recent academic work. If you've been out of the classroom for 5+ years, they're making decisions on your academic potential based on what you present them. So do you want them to see 5-year-old work? Or do you want to try and maybe go back, take a few classes and show them recent academic work, right? At the end of the day, yeah, we want to make sure that they have the best information about your academic aptitude. And maybe that is going and taking a few recent college classes, like you said, being thoughtful about if you're taking classes online, what courses are you taking? I had a student the other day, he was taking history of rock and roll in the Americas. And I was like, can we take some English classes or maybe, you know, establish that math foundation a little bit, right? Like, I'm sure that class was a lot of fun. But what do you want an admissions committee to, you know, decide an admissions decision on, that course or more general, you know, coursework? A question we get a lot too, and I love your perspective on this, Kyle, is around letters of recommendation for the student who has been out of the classroom for some time, or they haven't been able to go back and take college classes, or maybe they never spoke with a faculty member while they were taking college classes. What are your thoughts around that?
Absolutely. I normally, if they still have time, I plant the seed that it's most helpful for them to have an academic recommendation of some type, even if that person doesn't know them super well, and to be creative with that. Maybe that's someone from a leadership school within their military branch. Maybe that's someone who taught them as they cross-trained on a new MOS, for example. And thinking creatively about, you know, academics is not just a college class. Or if they're taking online classes and they're like, well, my instructor doesn't really know me. Well, so you have 4 months before the application's due to make them know you better, you know, reach out.
Yep.
And, but when push comes to shove, we will absolutely accept letters from their chain of command, letters from someone who taught them in a different context. If they are completely done with their service and with college at that moment, job supervisors, you know, we do recognize that at anywhere from a minor level to a major level, our military connected applicants can be quite different than the applicants we typically see. And so we have to demonstrate some flexibility in that admissions process. So frankly, we have some instant things in place, but also I go through every application as it arrives and figure out what can we waive under the circumstances, what can we substitute, and try to figure out you know, what's reasonable based upon their circumstances for us to expect, knowing
right.
that you know no two students, much less any no two service members are the same.
Yeah. And again, I mean, best practices coming out of this conversation, that is where I think admissions offices can be much more military friendly in this process, is recognizing that every applicant, you know, is going to look different. Either their training is going to look different, their experience, their journey to where they're at and their educational path is going to look different. And the admissions offices that are willing to be flexible and willing to think outside of the box, right? Those are the ones that are going to attract top military talent, just like Cornell has done. But I remind applicants all the time, learning happens outside of the confines of a wall room with a door and a chalkboard, dry erase board now, I suppose. But like the definition of learning is taking new information, processing it, and putting it into practice. And is there anyone that can speak to your ability to process new information? And once I explain it to them like that, they're like, okay, that makes more sense now, you know, or they can now identify individuals that could write strong letters of recommendation for them. So I think that having those conversations with you all in the admissions office and just saying, here's what I'm thinking, here's my situation, you know, this is where I'm kind of either stuck with parts of the admissions process, and recognizing that there are humans working in the admissions office like you that, you know, are advocating on their behalf and are there to make this process a little bit more flexible for them.
Absolutely. And we're trying as well as a university to be a bit more nimble and flexible. For example, we have a big working group right now that is analyzing several different levels of transfer credit at the university and looking at something such as the historical difference between an online course transferring in versus an in-person course. And moving forward, we are going to really truly evaluate only the context of the course, the content, the measures of assessment, not the modality in which it was taught. And so that's a key change that we are doing that's going to help our student veterans quite a bit. And not quite in place yet, but we're potentially, it looks very likely, going to even be able to offer an online bachelor's degree program beginning in fall 2025. That would be a tremendous win, because I do stand at education fairs all the time and have students come up and they're, you know, they are curious, but they're still serving for the next 3 years. And we don't have any online undergraduate programs right now. And so, you know, really I have to talk about setting them up for when they transition out. Now, if they are grad students, there are some options for them. But we're excited that that's, you know, looking pretty likely for not this coming fall, but next fall, or at least we'll have some options available for those who are still serving. So Cornell really,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, before the pandemic, Cornell was pretty much anti-online education. And now I think a lot of eyes have opened to the fact that it can be done very well, and that the reality is it's a force in higher education right now. And a lot of the same way many of us demand hybrid schedules for our jobs, a lot of students really demand some of that flexibility in the way in which their courses are taught.
Oh, I think that is an incredible initiative that, you know, so many of our students are like, okay, well, I want to take classes. What are some online programs you recommend? Because they recognize too that, you know, some online programs are a little bit more rigorous than others. Some are a little bit more engaging than others, right? And they, especially if they have dreams of going to schools like Cornell, they want that true classroom experience. They just need to be able to take it online, right? So when I'm suggesting schools, they're always like a little hesitant to, oh, well, how will online, you know, learning be perceived by admissions offices like Cornell? So gosh, I think if you guys can kind of lead that effort for VetLink partners or even schools of similar academic caliber, you know, that would just be an incredible door opening for our service members. But also a plug here is to, we run into the issue of students who want to go online, but tuition is over TA, over the cost allotted by TA. So just a way to continue to provide access to education for, you know, them to be able to utilize that incredible benefit too.
And that's very much on our radar. We're working on that right there with you. And it's, you know, luckily right now there are some top universities in the U.S., especially some flagship public universities that do have online options.
Yep.
And even before the newfound flexibility of transferable credit, have had some success in transferring in, you know, online courses, especially when those are the same courses that are taught on their campus.
Sure.
And so that's been a big plus, but, yeah, it's been, yeah, we're working on things. There are a lot of things. I mean, we certainly are not done, you know, developing and adapting to better serve our student veterans and to grow our student veteran population. And luckily, not that it's an arms race, but luckily many of our peers are also really ramping up, not just their efforts to recruit, but also to support their student veterans and becoming more flexible. And they're just, it's a great time to frankly be a student veteran, considering the full gamut of universities in the US, not just one segment of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, excited to continue to watch you all kind of lead that front there and keep us in the loop, because trust me when I tell you, Kyle, we will have applicants going your way if you're offering online courses. As we kind of wrap up our conversation here, I want to give you an opportunity just to speak to our listeners about, you know, why do you think Cornell is such a great place for student veterans?
Absolutely. Well, I think number one, you know, you take one of the top universities in the world and one of the top universities in the world that also has that private-public mission. So Cornell is the only Ivy and the only private university in the U.S. that is also the land-grant university for its state. So we have that mission of not just teaching and research, but also of public service and also of access. So we do take more transfer students than any of our peers do. We recognize that that pathway is the only pathway that's reasonable for some of our prospective students. And we don't want, you know, someone's high school education, like we talked about, to be a huge barrier for them. We also, you know, really, you know, among our peers, there's that economy of scale, you know, so we have more than 80 majors, more than 100 different academic programs all together. And our Any Person, Any Study vision that Ezra Cornell and Andrew Dixon White began with, you know, we opened our doors in 1868 to any qualified person, regardless of race, gender, or ideology. And so, not that I want to go into the whole history of Cornell, but some historians call us the first truly American university because women and men and people of all religions and color were studying together from the very first day that we opened our doors. And that was unheard of at that point in time. And again, 1868. And so not only am I, you know, proud of that history, but that remains one of the signature features, I think, of Cornell is that, you know, we do offer this incredibly diverse student body of, you know, farmers from upstate New York and students from other parts of the world that you may have to look up on a map because you've never heard of it before. 125 different countries are represented at the undergraduate level alone. 4,000 different classes, lots of different ways to study any one subject area, and that individual attention, you know, not just from the admissions process, but the fact that you're going to find a 9-to-1 student to faculty ratio at a place with 15,000 students. And then maybe the final thing really that I think helps set us apart is we're not in a big city. And there are some of our students who want a big city, and that's great. There are some great options there. We're in a small city / big college town, but one of the most amazing idyllic settings to study anywhere in the world. You know, this area is always rated as one of the top vacation destinations in the country. Not that I'm promoting everyone drink wine, but one of the top wine producing regions. You know, there within 10 square miles of campus, there are 100 waterfalls and 4 state parks. Wow. The campus sits on a hill overlooking a giant glacial lake that's 40 miles long and 400 feet deep. And we embrace that. One of our student veterans who came in actually just last fall, he was studying marine biology and he needed to take a course to become dive certified because he was already engaged in research and he was going to need to be able to have dive certification to research the symbiotic relationship between these two fish and their coral reef fish. So he took a physical education class here on beginning diving. And then he, over the spring break, went and did an advanced level diving certification down in the Caribbean, because it is coral reef fish. And we were able to fund him through one of our grants that a donor, who is a veteran alum, provided. And so he wrote up a grant. We were able to fund that since the spring break experience above and beyond. And it was a class as well. And then this summer, he actually went and studied at Cornell's marine biology laboratory on an island off the coast of Maine to go study there. And so he has really gone in head first to take advantage of all the things that Cornell has to offer, you know, from training to dive in Cayuga Lake just down the hill to being supported by some of our alumni donations to go do these amazing, cool things to being at Cornell in Maine. And I kind of want his life, you know. I was a wildlife biology major as an undergraduate student, and this is just, you know, it's one of the coolest experiences that I have found. But that's what these students are doing. They're diving in head first, and I think we attract that. You know, we have with 1,300 clubs and just so many opportunities, we do attract students who are excited by that sheer array of options to pick from, and there's not a cookie cutter curriculum that they must follow. It's distribution requirements of sure cover content areas, but maybe you have 100 options within those content areas. So even if you hate math, you can probably find a math course to take somewhere.
That you're fine.
Yeah.
Might be a stretch for me. I don't know. Math is not my strong suit. But Kyle, I tell our applicants, our ambassadors all the time that when we bring a VentLink partner on, we absolutely require that they have a minimum graduation rate, that they're a yellow ribbon institution. But I also say the expectation, because it's not a requirement, the expectation is that they are supporting the student veteran on their campus as well. And I think this conversation, you know, there's no one who would listen to this conversation would say Cornell is not supporting, you know, their student veterans on their campus. So, I mean, just an incredible example of the, you know, opportunities available to students, but also the support and the resources that you all have been so mindful about of putting in place. And I mean, there's no denying that our students who end up at Cornell are supported and are thriving in a, you know, incredibly colorful and rewarding academic environment. So thank you so much for offering your time for our listeners to learn more about Cornell. And if any of our listeners have any questions and we can get you in touch with Kyle, please reach out. I'm more than happy to make that connection so we can make sure all of your questions are answered. But Kyle, thank you so much again.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
That's all we have for this episode. Join us next week, same time, same place, where we share more Service to School stories. Service to School Stories is hosted by Sydney Mathis, Chief Program Officer, and Alec Emmert, Service to School CEO. Our podcast is produced and edited by our Director of Communication, Amanda Tobias. Service to School is a 501c3 nonprofit providing free college admission support to transitioning service members and veterans. Join us next week and follow us for more on your favorite social media platforms.